Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Allison Dunning from the Mood Disorders Association. So tell me a little bit about the Mood Disorders Society.
Okay, so the Mood Disorders Association of Ontario is a mental health support organization. A lot of the work that we do centers around peer support, which means that we support people who have experience with mental health issues in training them how to use that experience to support other people that are currently coping with mental health challenges. Some mental health challenges include depression, anxiety, bipolar, but our organization doesn't actually operate on diagnoses. So anybody experiencing symptoms of the above mentioned difficulties are welcome to access our services. So our services are things like we have a warm line, so a phone line where people can call in and seek some mental health support with what they're experiencing. We also do drop-in peer support groups. So those are groups led by two volunteer facilitators who identify as peers, which means they have the lived experience. And it's just a safe space for sharing sort of experiences and coping strategies and wellness tools and stuff like that, in a safe setting. We also offer individual peer support, so meeting one-on-one with peers with lived experience. And we also offer counseling with some of our staff social workers. That's a little bit about the organization.
So, are there any challenges in the work of bringing out the word about mental health, as society still has its stigmas and misperceptions?
Yeah, always. I think it's gotten a little bit better over the years. We're definitely making some progress in that. But there's always challenges in sort of advocating for individuals with mental health issues. It's something that a lot of people deal with, and a lot of the time people deal with it and don't access treatment because of the stigma and stuff like that exists around this stuff, which is unfortunate. So we do work really hard to sort of advocate for an open communication about the difficulties that are going on, and general acceptance of all people, regardless of what they're dealing with, so that we can help foster, you know, a safe and supportive environment with regards to mental health.
So, to look at the converse side of things, in your time working with those who are spreading the word and providing support, has there been any success moment that stands out for you?
Yeah, so, I mean, on a daily basis, we have people accessing our services who have admitted that it's taken them a long time to even be able to walk through our doors and talk about what's going on for them, or make the phone call on the warm line or attend a support group. So no matter how they access services, there is a lot of sort of hope day to day in people that are sort of finally feeling like they're able to come forward and admit that there's something going on for them, and to seek the support that they need to be well. So on a day-to-day basis, I think there's a lot of notable successes that we see. Other initiatives that we've started are things like our Youth Advisory Committee. So this is a committee of youth that have come forward and applied to be a part of this committee to help us with some of the programming that we offer at the Mood Disorders Association. So it's a committee of very young people that are, some of them do have lived experience themselves in the mental health spectrum, and they've all come forward with an interest in improving mental health care for youth and young adults. So things like that, I think, are a really good sign and a really hopeful sort of piece to our organization that we're really excited to be able to foster.
So if you could send any one message to the community about the need for inclusion of people with mental health issues, what would you say?
It's a good question. I think the most important thing to realize is that mental health touches everybody. Whether it's, you know, something as simple as being stressed out at work or experiencing anxiety, experiencing depression, either within yourself or a loved one that you're connected to, like, it really does affect everybody. So being totally mindful of that in your day-to-day interactions, I think, is so important. And just really, you know, empathizing with the people around you, and considering the possibility of what they might be dealing with when you're communicating with them, and providing that safe space of acceptance with whatever people are coping with is really important, just in general, I think.
So if you could see any one thing added to the community in terms of support for these people, what would it be?
Good question. I think it's most important to listen to the experiences of the people in order to then seek some kind of support for them, or to assist them in seeking the support. Making assumptions about what kind of support is going to help somebody doesn't necessarily have the best outcome. If it's possible to listen to that person's experience as they're experiencing it, and then taking that information, really considering it, and then suggesting, you know, resources or supports or something that might benefit their particular situation, I think is really important. So just being a listening ear to the experiences of the person, and encouraging that and empathizing with their experiences, I think will go a long way. Because as somebody who identifies with this experience myself, I think when somebody approached me saying, hey, like, I really want to know what this experience is like for you, and then they listened to what the experience is like for me, I was much more receptive to any suggestion they had about accessing support or sharing that information, just because they genuinely listened and they genuinely showed an interest in understanding what was going on for me. So the second somebody does that, I think it really opens up the communication more fully and allows for more, like, I felt a lot better about going to access supports once this person had listened to me fully.
So if you're comfortable with it, would you be willing to share a little bit about your own story?
Sure. So from a young age, I suffered from depression and anxiety, but I didn't necessarily know that it was called depression and anxiety when I was first experiencing it. So in high school, I missed a lot of school because I wasn't well. I was fortunate to have the support of my parents in trying to figure out what was going on with regards to that. And eventually, through many efforts from all parties involved, I did access some of the supports that I needed, which allowed me to continue through high school. After high school, I took a year off to sort of take care of myself for a little while and figure out my next steps. So I was in a few treatment programs within that time off for my mental health. And then following that year, I was able to go away to university where I studied psychology and sociology, which most definitely was was sort of a choice that I made based on some of my own experiences. Some of my experiences within the mental health support network that I interacted with were challenging. So I decided to go to school within this field, thinking that perhaps I might be able to offer some valuable perspective to the field afterwards. So really my experience when I was younger, my mental health experience has really informed my career today. And I'm in the end very grateful for what I went to, but it was definitely a challenging time and challenging experience to go through. But I'm grateful that I'm able to use some of that experience now to help support other people that are currently experiencing some difficulties.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
No problem.
Mood disorders, much like learning disabilities, they're among the hardest things to recognize upon first glance. The fact of the matter is, for society, it can be a little easier to recognize and thereby understand something like paralysis or blindness, as there are telltale signs. But we, as a people, need to keep an open mind. We need not simply jump to a conclusion that because a person doesn't necessarily answer right away or might have some emotion shown in a conversation, they are to be veered away from or shunned by society. No, we should keep an open mind about people and the circumstances, whatever they may be. Mental health issues are no less valid on the disability spectrum than something like paralysis or blindness, deafness. Fact is, we must learn to recognize that not only these simply conditions that are one part of a person's life, but that these people have something to offer society, regardless of the condition. Regardless of what makes them special or unique, they have a gift to give to us as a people. And honestly, we'd be foolish not to embrace that, not to learn from others. We can talk about diversity all we want. When the rubber hits the road, the question is, how open is our mind? HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Summertime means food, friends, and travel. Summertime also means construction time, so while driving through construction zones, please be patient and considerate of road workers and other drivers en route to a safe and enjoyable summer. This message is brought to you by the Laborers International Union of North America, LAUNA 625. LAUNA members recognize that with opportunities brought to them by the community, comes a responsibility to give back to the community. And that is exactly what LAUNA members will be doing during festival season, especially the 2017 Blues Fest Windsor.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Allison Dunning from the Mood Disorders Association. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Penny Harton from the World Blind Union. So tell me a little bit about the World Blind Union.
Well, the World Blind Union is the internationally recognized organization that represents the needs and views of blind and partially sighted people at the international level, and it does that through its members in about 190 countries. So most countries that are members of the World Blind Union are members of, or most countries that are members of the United Nations are members of the WBU. And it's basically our members are organizations of and for the blind within those countries.
So how do you go about spreading the word about the work you do?
Well, we do it in a number of ways. Certainly one way is through our member organizations who actually provide services on the ground to blind and partially sighted people. But in terms of the work that we do at the international level, much of what we do is included on our website. We do try to include a lot of policies, a lot of position papers, a lot of representation submissions that we have made, on our website. We're very active, in particularly in Twitter, and to a certain amount on Facebook as well. We don't get involved in Instagram and some of the sites that really involve a lot of very visual kinds of information. And we also produce a quarterly e-bulletin that goes to all of our members worldwide, as well as to any other interested parties. And that includes information about what WVU is doing, about what some of our members are doing in the regions, and other information and resources and tools that will be of interest to our members and to blind people worldwide.
So, given that it's an international organization, what are some of the commonalities in the challenges facing blind and partially sighted people today?
Well, you know, the issues that we face, because we're based in Canada, as you know, but the issues that we face in Canada are very similar to what's faced by blind and partially sighted people worldwide. The situation of employment, the lack of employment for blind and partially sighted people is still a huge problem in most countries of the world. With over 60% unemployed, even in countries like Canada, the U.S., the United Kingdom, Australia, and so on. And those numbers reach closer to 90% or even higher in developing countries. And even despite the efforts that have been made with respect to technology and our regulatory environments and more social inclusion, the employment situation hasn't improved all that much. That's a key issue that faces blind people wherever they live. Access to technology and access to affordable available technology is a key issue everywhere in the world. Yes, some of us are able to use the iPhones and the iPads and get good access to a lot of information and technology through that, but the majority of blind and partially sighted people, even in developed countries like Canada and the U.S., can't afford it because they're expensive. And if you live in a developing country, then you don't have access. We're really concerned about some of the technological developments that are using touchscreens and aren't interfaced with access devices. And that can include your home appliances, you know, whether it's your coffee makers now or whether it's the laundry machines or microwaves that have the touch screens and really rely on vision. So we're concerned about that kind of thing, and that affects blind people worldwide. Obviously, access to information. Generally around the world, blind people don't have the same access to the printed world as sighted people do. We estimate that less than 10% of published works are made available in accessible formats. That's in countries like Canada and the U.S., and it's only maybe a couple of percent in developing countries. So that's why a treaty such as the Marrakesh Treaty that the World Blind Union spearheaded was adopted 2013, came into force last year, and now has 29 countries that have ratified. That's why that kind of thing is so important to help to alleviate the lack of information access for us worldwide.
So to look at the converse side of things, in your time with the union, is there any success moment that stands out for you?
Yes. I would say we're getting much more attention at the international level, and certainly within the United Nations and the UN agencies. So the development of the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, that's just a little over 10 years old now, and it's now being been ratified in 174 countries. So most countries now are looking at policies and programs that will improve the status of people with disabilities. The new Sustainable Development Goals that replace the Millennium Development Goals now include people with disabilities. The original goals, they didn't. And so when they were measuring whether or not some progress had been made worldwide in areas like poverty, access to education, and so on, they weren't looking at whether or not it impacted people with disabilities, and so they really weren't included in the programs, and not much progress was made. Now with the new Sustainable Development Goals that are applicable to all countries in the world, not just developing countries, they will be looking at what progress is being made for people with disabilities in healthcare and education and employment, in accessible cities and reducing poverty and so on and so forth. So we are getting the attention of policymakers at the international level, and that carries down to the national level as well, because our countries have to report. They have to report in front of their peers at the UN. They have to report on what they're doing. And so there is progress being made. Is it enough? No. But it's definitely on the worldwide agenda, and we have seen some progress. But we still need to be vigilant.
So one of my favorite and past guests of the show, Jose Vieira, is tied to the union itself. Can you tell me a little bit about his role?
Yes. Jose works for the World Blind Union. His title is Human Rights Policy Advisor for the WBU. He works out of his home in Argentina, actually. But he works with our WBU members around the world in helping them to understand instruments like the CRPD, like the Sustainable Development Goals, and help them work with their countries to ensure that when they're implementing their policies and programs, that they're including the needs of people who are blind or partially sighted within their programs. And Jose also helps us to respond to international opportunities for input on areas that would be of interest to us. Good examples are that the Human Rights Council sometimes has special programs looking at what's the situation of women in rural areas, for example. So Jose would help us develop a response to say, well, these are the implications for women who are blind or partially sighted living in rural areas, and how their needs are different generally and how they need to be included. We've just made a response to the CRPD Article 19 on independent living, and looking at what are the implications for people who are blind or partially sighted for independent living, for access to housing, access to transportation, access to information, and how do we ensure that those are reflected in the international policies and programs and the work of the CRPD committee. So Jose is really involved in helping the WBU interpret our particular needs and views for the UN bodies, and also helping our WBU members in ensuring that their governments reflect our needs.
So if you could send any one message to the world community about the need for more inclusion and equal access, what would you say?
I would say that with the right training, the right skills, opportunities for training, opportunities for skills, opportunities for the tools and resources that people who are blind or partially sighted need, then we are able to participate on an equal basis with anyone, whether it's employment, whether it's education. So it's really, really important to provide access to the specialized education, training, skills, and tools that all of us need to level that playing field.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. So if I have this straight, my friends, having 10% of printed materials presently available for people with blindness or vision impairments, that's a joke. It's the same as saying to a person affected by these conditions that your right to learn and understand and appreciate a significant piece of culture is only 10% as valuable as someone who's sighted. Who gave us the authority, or the prejudice, or whatever it is, to say that to anyone? Now, the fact of the matter is, it is every person's right to learn, to grow, to understand and to appreciate. And if we don't make these materials accessible, we're only cutting off our own hands. For the publishers, they might stop and ask themselves for the 5 seconds it would take. Is someone with a vision impairment someday going to want to purchase or to make use of this material? Gee, that could be a significant consumer base. Now, why in the world would we say, yes, I'm going to cater to this consumer, but no, this one has no right. They wouldn't be able to appreciate it. For a lot of vision loss is actually acquired. If a person loses their sight and has been an avid reader all their life, who are we to tell them that you have to stop? You just can't do it anymore simply because your eyes work a little differently now. Now, with the Marrakesh Treaty, it's really great progress being made because this will ease international copyright restrictions on such printed material. For the fact is, it will be fewer hoops that accessible materials have to go through. And that will open some doors. It will make things easier. However, like anything in disability life, it comes down to monitoring and advocacy. If those affected with blindness and vision impairments truly seek for equality, if they truly want to be accepted, valued, and understood for the strong, capable people they are, they must be aware of the fact that if their voices aren't spoken with, they can't be heard. For the fact is, it's easy for a government or any organization to say, oh yes, we want to do this, that, and the other to make things accessible, to level the playing field. But if people with disabilities let it fall by the wayside, if they don't say, you said you deliver on this, and you haven't, it's easy for those in power to get away with. It's easy for them to say, nobody's talking about it, so it simply doesn't matter. And that is shortchanging ourselves. Marrakesh is a great and wonderful opportunity for those affected. And the World Blind Union has said they will be pushing to make sure our ideals match our actions. And the truth of the matter is, that's how it should be. But it falls to every individual with a disability or without, anyone just with an active interest, to say, I believe we can do better. 10% in an enlightened society, we're only making 10% of our materials accessible. And that is not taking into consideration the equality, the basic human rights of these people. For the fact is, if those who decided, nah, I don't want it to be in Braille, were to lose their sight, someone would have to understand their situation and say, we're going to make it accessible for you now. Someone, somewhere, has to think beyond themselves for any progress to be made. For people with disabilities, they have to know their rights, they have to stand for their rights. But they have to remember, just because there are going to be setbacks, there are going to be hard times, does not mean change is a hopeless process. The very existence of things like the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities is a sign of progress, that more and more we are recognizing people with disabilities not only have to be taken into consideration, but they can create and accomplish and further improve things for the next wave coming in. People with disabilities don't just plan it for themselves. They work for the betterment of life in general. So the new generation of leaders can come in with strength and with hope. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me You've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.